creativity goes beyond a pencil and a paintbrush. Hello, creative people, and welcome to I Am Creative. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend your time with us. So what are we doing here? We are really diving into this word creativity and what it means. In all of the conversations that I have had, nobody has ever defined creativity as drawing or painting. People have defined creativity as your soul's essence, that magic spark, how you show up in the world. What my true mission is to really expand this definition and allow people to be able to see themselves in it. Because when people see themselves in this definition, when they've never been told that they fit inside of it, they stand up straighter. They feel like they have something to offer the world and basically are happier humans. So these conversations are structured on three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? So let's just dive right in. So my inspiring guest today is Stacy Brass Russell. She is a soulful business and life transformation coach who has personally coached hundreds of experts and entrepreneurs on how to attract their ideal clients and create organic content that will turn their passion into profit. Stacy, welcome to the space. So happy that you're here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. I'm excited to have this conversation.
I know. I can't wait to see where it goes. This is going to be fun. Okay, so let's just dive right in. And we'd love to hear, for people to get to know you a little bit more, would you please share a fun fact about yourself before we dive in?
Sure. Well, we may end up talking about this at some point, but a fun fact about me is that I was actually in the original production of the show Annie on Broadway for 2 years when I was 10 years old.
I remember you talking about that, and that with Sarah Jessica Parker, right?
Yes, Sarah was my Annie. we all talk about our Annies like they're ours. Yes, Sarah was my Annie.
So actually, before we go in, give us just a little bit about that, because you're 10 years old, and this happened, was it the second half of the show?
It was about 2 years in. So, you know, there was like the original cast of the orphans that are the ones on the album. And then when those girls started leaving and they started, you know, having that first round of replacements, I came in that first round of replacements.
Well, what I meant was, didn't she get hurt or something?
Yes. So when I started in the show, I was actually hired at first to be the understudy for all of the orphans. And so I had to learn, you know, all of these parts and my job was to sit. I had to be at the show no matter what, even if I, you know, if I wasn't going on. And in my very first week as the understudy, Sarah Jessica Parker actually chipped her front tooth with her scrub brush during Hard Knock Life. And which we didn't know that's what happened. All we knew was that she, like, you know, left the stage in the middle of this musical number. And I was sitting in the audience and I had only had 4 days of rehearsal total. They kind of hired me assuming that, like, nothing would happen, right? And I wasn't the understudy for Annie. The way that they did it was one of the actual orphans was the Annie understudy. And so if she ever, if Annie ever wasn't going on, one of the orphans would be Annie, and then the understudy would play that orphan's role. And so, you know, she went running off the stage. I had only had 4 days of rehearsal, and all of a sudden, they like turn the, you know, they have to bring the curtain down. And they bring the audience, you know, lights a little up, and they make an announcement, you know, please stay in your seats. The show will resume shortly. I mean, and remember, Sarah Jessica Parker wasn't famous. I mean, she was playing Annie, but she wasn't, you know, famous yet. And they came and got me from the audience, and they had already been changing the orphan that was the Annie understudy. She was already like in her costume and wig, and they had restarted the show, and I was, you know, backstage, and they were putting my costume on and telling me, you know, basically reminding me of what they had, you know, what I had learned in the last few days. And literally, Hollis, I'm not even kidding you when I say I was on the Broadway stage within 20 minutes of that all happening. And then all of a sudden, there I was, like in a Broadway show. So yes, I, my first time on Broadway, I did three quarters of a show.
Oh my God. At 10 years old.
At 10 years old. With no one in the audience for me. Like, my parents weren't there. Like, so it was, I literally, you know, it wasn't planned. So it's not like my parents knew that I was going to be in a Broadway show that day. And so technically, you know, they missed my Broadway debut.
Oh my God. So this is just like an opener, everybody, for understanding that not everything is planned. And some of the biggest opportunities that we get are unplanned. I mean, you can't make that up.
Well, and also, you know, as an adult, I mean, I just turned 55, right? So we're talking about 45 years ago this happened. As an adult and in my business, and I know we're going to talk more about, you know, what we do and whatever, but in my business and what I do now as a coach for other people, such a big part of creativity and, you know, and what it means to be like creative in our lives and businesses, even if it's not like being an artist or a performer or whatever, I actually really think that it's a lot about being able to be in the moment and about being able to, you know, kind of like, I don't know how to say it. I was about to say sort of like, you know, not dwell in the sort of like the fear of not being ready or not being perfect or, you know what I mean? And I have to help people with this all the time about sort of like that difference between practicing, rehearsing, doing your prep, doing your work. But then no matter what, there's always going to be this moment where you just have to do the thing. And I don't think you're ever going to feel fully ready or prepared. And when I really look back at my, why am I able to know that and do that so well? I actually think it started then. Like when I really think about what I help other people with and teach people about, you know, there's only so much we can do to get you quote unquote ready to do your first workshop or, you know, like have a client or put yourself out there. And then there's always going to be this feeling that you're not really ready, but you're not going to ever feel ready. And I think that for me, I started to learn that like when I was 10.
Yeah. So, okay. So you naturally segued, and I'm going to ask you if this is what your true definition is, because it's pretty much what you gave. My question is, how do you define creativity? And what you said is creativity is being able to be in the moment and not dwell in the fear of not being ready. Is that what you...
I think that's part of it. I mean, I knew that we were going to talk about what is my definition of creativity. And, you know, yes, it's true. I am a performing artist. So for me, creativity for much of my life was expressing myself through in that way. Right. But now that's not really the focus of what I do, for 20 plus years, I've been teaching yoga and talking about creativity actually being an innate human quality or ability that is directly related to our ability to problem solve. It's like, it's our ability to, I really think that creativity is our ability to think in a multitude of ways or, you know, and to see many different ways to get somewhere or to solve a problem or to express ourselves, whether it's expressing ourselves artistically or in any other way. I think that creativity is the innate ability to to, you know, to express or to take what's inside of you or what you know, and then to bring it out into the world and apply it.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. And that's exactly what this space is about. This is why I love these conversations. And I may say this every time, but it truly is really expanding this definition and having people who don't consider themselves quote unquote creative, because it's beyond this idea of drawing and painting. And exactly what you just said of problem solving, of thinking in a multitude of ways. Everybody does this. It's just a matter of really understanding and owning it and pushing yourself in a sense to it. Just, I get so excited when I see a light bulb go on for people and they're just like,
yeah,
oh, I never thought of myself that way. You mean I am a creative person? It's like, yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I made an episode of my podcast that came out a couple of weeks ago and it's called I'm an Introvert and Other Things Entrepreneurs Say. But then inside the episode, I basically focus on two things that I hear all the time as kind of things that the people that work with me come to me as an obstacle that they perceive, which is one, they consider themselves an introvert, which therefore translates to it's hard for them to put themselves out there and be visible and stuff like that. And then the second thing, and this is what my whole episode is based on, is how many people say to me, I'm not creative. And how often I have to have this conversation and be like, that's a limiting belief, because there's no such thing. You're a human being, therefore you're creative, because it's an innate quality in a human being to be creative. And so that's just a belief, and we have to maybe we have to change your definition of creativity, or we have to somehow look at that limiting belief, because you are creative. Like that is part, you're like, it's a birthright.
Yeah, it is. And when people own it, their lives change. It really, you see that. You see it, I see it with my people that I work with, and it's just, it's life-changing. It's empowering. I would love for people to learn more about, let's go on a little bit of a journey before, you know, this is all structured around three questions, but it all leads into one another. So let's learn a little bit more about you. So here you were 10 years old, thrown into this. We know that you were, you're an actress and all of this. Take us wherever you want to go. I mean, I know you've owned many things, and it seems like everything that you do, really catches on pretty quickly, like with your yoga studio, and you have a way of attracting your ideal clients. So, yeah, take us where you want to go on that so we can learn about you, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to share that. So, you know, I would have to say that, I mean, because here we are on, you know, your show about creativity, I think that my whole journey is this kind of beautiful example of being creative with how you get to like live your life, because I think that a lot of people get a little stuck, and let's say they make a commitment or a decision, or they're, you know, to do something, or their path takes them in a certain direction. I think there's a lot of fear around changing that, around changing your mind or changing the course of things. And so that's why so many people end up staying, we'll call it stuck, even though I don't really believe in stuckness, but stuck or feeling like they can't, you know, do what they really want to do. I think that my journey is such an example of being creative in that way and allowing oneself to evolve. And so, you know, I started in Annie when I was 10. Now, I didn't have stage parents that were pushy. You know, it was my desire, and my parents basically, you know, I was 10, so I couldn't just do it on my own. So obviously I'm very grateful that I had parents that supported that, but it wasn't like I had these like pushy stage parents. But so in me, I was like, I want to be, you know, a performer. I want to be a Broadway star, blah, blah, blah. And so I was very supported by my parents on my journey to in show business, we'll call it. And I stayed in show business for many, many years. I worked a lot. I was on Broadway again in my early 20s in a revival of Fiddler on the Roof. I worked at just the best regional theaters all around the country. I did a lot of commercials and voiceovers. I mean, I really had a very, very lovely career. And there was this point, though, when I was, you know, and also I had a personal life stuff happened too. My father died when I was a sophomore in college, and that really changed a lot of my trajectory because my financial situation was greatly impacted at that time. And so I went from being, you know, and I'm not going to lie, a rather privileged person in show business who had parents that were still able to, you know, supplement and fund my, you know, my being able to have pay my rent and whatever, even though I was working, I wasn't making enough money as an actor to, like, you know, to be able to do everything myself. And so, you know, when that got cut off, it was hard to be an actor in New York without that supplement. It's not, you know, it's not that easy to support yourself in New York City. And so, you know, I was doing what any actor has to do. I was waiting tables, I was catering, I was temping. And this is another example of creativity. No matter where I went and what I did, I was able to be good at it. And I enjoyed being good at it. You know what I mean? Like so I did lots of things while I was also pursuing my acting. But then there was this point where we were on the actors. It's funny. We just ended a strike in show business, you know, but back when I'm talking about, we were in a strike and I wasn't able to work as a commercial actor at that time. And so I was very unhappy waiting tables. I was just waiting tables so much more. And that's when I was doing yoga. And I loved yoga. And this is one of the things that I help my clients with. I thought, I love yoga, and I actually think I'd be really good at teaching it, you know? And so I did a teacher training thinking that that would become like just another revenue stream for me. And I started teaching yoga, and I was good at it. And I started getting a lot of people following me and wanting to take my class. And so I kind of became a popular yoga teacher quickly. And what happened was I kind of didn't want to go out of town anymore to do shows because I was building a following and I was really enjoying it. So there was this period of time where I was, you know, teaching yoga, but really only auditioning for things that would, you know, unless it was a movie or something, but, you know, theater in New York and commercials and voiceovers. And over time, I had an opportunity to open a yoga studio, and it felt like, you know, there was someone who wanted to finance a yoga studio for myself and another teacher. And it felt like an opportunity that was too good to pass up. And, you know, and so I did that, and I owned a yoga studio. By this point, I was teaching teachers how to be teachers. I was a teacher trainer. So really, you know, evolving in a career as a yoga teacher. But, and this I think is relevant to our audience here, what I was doing was I was then realizing that I didn't really love auditioning and feeling like my whole ability to do my art, to sing, to be on stage, to perform. I didn't like that. That felt like there were all of these people who were in charge of deciding whether or not I got to do that, yeah. Right? That's what auditions are, and casting directors. And I call it the gatekeepers. And I started really feeling resentful that there seemed to be so many other people who had to decide if I was allowed to go perform. And so I did my own show. So I hired a musical director. And while I was making really great money as a yoga teacher, doing that, I also started working on my own music. I'm not a songwriter, but just working on what I wanted to sing and what I wanted to do. And I started doing my own show. And then I had this opportunity to open the yoga studio, and I was in that business for 7 years. And, you know, I'm going to be totally honest with you. The thing that started to kind of wear me down and make me unhappy was that because it was a business that I owned with two other people, and I felt like they were sort of like watching me or something, I couldn't be creative. I didn't have time. Like, I felt like these other two people expected me to do nothing other than focus on our business. And so I wasn't singing. I wasn't doing my own show. I wasn't doing any of those things because it didn't feel possible. And that's when I made the decision to figure out a way out. And so I became a coach, a health and life coach, thinking that that would give me more freedom to just use my gifts and skills the way I want to. And that was 5 years ago. I did my training. I got out of the business partnership and continued to teach yoga up until the pandemic while I was building my coaching business. And my coaching business started in 2018, and I was a health and life coach, but just because of the nature of how I don't like to call it reinvented, I call it evolved, but how I've evolved and continued to figure out how to do what lights me up, how to use what I know I'm good at, how to nurture that and, do whatever I need to do. I started attracting other people that wanted me to help them to do that also. And that's kind of how I ended up becoming a business coach, was because so many entrepreneurs, they're really good at what they do, but what they don't know how to do is like kind of create content or like, their messaging or package their gifts and their skills and their expertise in a way that they want to put that out into the world. And so it's kind of been this natural evolution to get to where I am right now.
Isn't that amazing? It's just, everything builds on itself, and one thing kind of leads to another. And it's just, even when something doesn't feel like it's your thing, it's not your forever thing, it's still taking all of those things that you've learned along the way. I mean, I'm so impressed by everything that you do and everything that you've done and your viewpoint on it. But there's a word that I'm curious about this whole time. I've been wanting to ask. I'm like, okay, you need to just ask her. You said you didn't like the word stuckness.
Mm-hmm.
What word do you replace that with?
I think I like to tell people percolating or, okay. So here's the thing. Stuck, is this implication that to me, it's an identity. It's kind of like you're saying, I'm stuck, right? Instead of maybe thinking I need to maybe open a channel or reopen my flow. Because I do think that we have creative energy, that we have creative flow. And I think that when we keep repeating the word stuck, and that, look, I'm very into like laws of the universe and how we communicate, and so I'm an NLP, practitioner. And so that's why I said I don't love the word stuck, because I think when we reiterate a word over and over and over again, we basically will have that experience, right? So if I keep saying, I'm stuck, I'm stuck, I'm stuck, right? I'm going to be stuck. But if I say, I'm curious about how I can move from where I am right now, I feel stagnant, or I feel like things are not moving, or I feel like things are not coming, then I can get curious about, so what do I need to do to open that channel or to, free up something? And so it's a little bit more of like a language thing for me. It's not, it's not that I don't believe that we ever feel like things aren't coming as fast as we would like, right? But I do try to encourage my clients to, rather than just reiterating or repeating, I'm so stuck, I feel stuck, that we get curious and we go, what is it that I'm wanting to express or do? And why am I feeling like it's not, why am I feeling like I'm not getting there or doing it?
Yeah. It's getting to the core of it.
Yeah. And maybe even just also recognizing that there's ebb and flow in, we're not, we can't, we're we're complex human beings, and our brains, you know, and this is like my big thing is brains. Our brains are very, very, they're very complicated, and we don't always have, you know, we can't always like do things on command, right? Like sometimes we have to, like, you know, because this is the thing that comes up so often. Like, for example, I'll have a client and they're working on maybe like a topic for a workshop, or they're writing copy for something. This is what a lot of my clients do, you know, and we'll discuss what they're going to do. We'll talk about like, okay, you're going to do this workshop, you're going to write a talk, whatever they're going to do. And then literally 24 hours later, I'll get a message like, I'm stuck. Nothing's coming to me. And I'll say, well, it takes more time than 24 hours for your brilliant idea to like come through. And you know what I mean? Like, and I'll say like, what if you're not stuck? Like, what if you just knew that brainstorming and, you know, contemplating and idea forming, what if you just decided that that doesn't happen immediately? What if you knew that it takes, that it might take, sometimes for me, Hollis, when I have like an event or something coming up, that I need to create the sales page for, or the opt-in, or do whatever. Sometimes it takes me weeks for it to feel like I have clarity on what exactly I want to say, you know? And so I have to help people all the time with this like funny idea that things don't come like on demand. Sometimes you have to like percolate, I call it. You have to like brainstorm. You have to brain dump. You have to put yourself in situations that inspire you. You have to like, you have to be okay with things taking time, with things being slow, if that's the way that they're happening. And you know, and if you don't know that that's the way it might go, you may have, and I call this a thinking error, you may have the wrong idea that somehow you're stuck because it isn't happening as fast as you decided it should.
Here, I have to give that a little sound effect. Here we go. That in our world of give it to me now,
yeah,
is, thank you for stressing that. Thank you for pointing out that there is one, the ebb and flow, and that it's sometimes things do come really quickly. I have had things come to me and I'm just like, clear as day, that's what it is. There's still more to work out, but it's like clear. And then other times it's like presenting itself, but like you're using the word, you've used it a number of times, curious. It's getting
totally
and then letting it kind of, you know, guide and brain dump and brainstorm, all these tools that you said to use. It's great.
Yeah, and just to like, you know, follow up on that, what you just said about sometimes it does come really fast. I call that like a divine download, right? Like every once in a while you get a divine download. It just comes, it's so clear, and then you can like whatever you have to do, tweak, work on it. And when that happens, oh my God, it's so wonderful. But we can't expect that to be,
yes,
right? Like that's not, we also have to have our backup, right? Which is our process.
Yeah. 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 Completely agree. So, and there is the beauty in the brainstorm and the brain dump and that's why I have found community. At times it's very internal and I can be like, look, okay, this is me going inwards and I'm working it out. But then when I do have that community and I have those few people that I reach out to, because from what I've learned is that if you ask too many people, you know, you get too many opinions, and then your brain, then you get messed up on what you were actually thinking. But in presenting to, you know, one or two people and just being like, would you like listen to me? Just listen. Or I want some feedback, or brainstorm with this mate, you know, to be helpful, to then take it to another level where you're like, oh my God, I never thought of it that way.
Well, I think that's, you know, I personally am always in a, you know, I'm always in containers, I call it, right? Because I don't want to be, I don't want to, one of the things that I know happens with a lot of people is that they just sort of try to look at what other people are doing, and just kind of like do a little comparing or try to figure out their own stuff based on what they see other people doing. And for me, I'm always inside of some sort of like a container. So I always have my coach, right? Who's like a person who I get to do what we're talking about, like, you know, like run things by, brainstorm with. I mean, I'm very fortunate. My husband is a great partner for that. But then also I'm always inside of some sort of like small, like a mastermind. Like I'm always in a community of peers. And then of course I have my community of, like, I call it my inner circle, right? Of like my clients that have been with me for a really long time. There's like this kind of core group. And even though, you know, I'm their coach or whatever, I feel like within our circle is also where I get to work stuff out. You know, I get to say, hey, I'm going to bring this to our mastermind for a retreat. And I'll do this content or this material, you know, and then decide if that feels like something that I would then, you know, create something out of. So yeah, I agree. Like we need to have those key, you know, people or communities, as you put it, where we get to safely, I think that's an important word that we didn't say yet, to feel safe.
Yes.
In our creativity. Because one of the things that I think holds so many people back is the fear of what other people will think. The fear of what if I express myself? What if I say, hey, I'm going to do this. And then I put myself out there and I get ridiculed or somebody goes, well, that sucks, right? I think that we have so much fear of that can hold someone back from being creative and putting themselves out there, that fear. And so we have to create those safe environments so that we can have that insulation and then literally not give a shit what anybody thinks.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This goes back to my 30 years of teaching art in classrooms, in various spaces, working literally with from 18 months to 100 years old, all abilities. And it's, I always say, creating safe spaces for people to express, because if people do not feel safe, they will not express. It's just that simple. And it's meeting people where they are. You can't assume that people know everything. So it's just kind of like, it's talking to them, it's listening to them, and it's really giving them this container, like you use the word container, to be able to be like, okay, I can explore and not be judged. I can express myself and people won't say, you know, that's stupid. And then it just creates expansion. Seeing it again and again. Kids in as young as like second, third grade, it can start.
Yeah.
Where they start getting like questioning themselves. Even it can start nowadays, like even in first grade. But it's like you really start to see it like around third grade, fourth grade, that can start to kick in. And then I've seen adults like be pissed about things because they were told when they were young, here they are like in their 40s, and they're talking about something in middle school. I can't imagine.
Yeah, well,
just imagine what that's held them back from, you know, that belief. It becomes a belief.
Well, I mean, and also just, I think, you know, since we're talking also about like, you know, creativity in general, I also think that that when a lot of times when a child, whatever age you want to define that as, I think any, for as long as you're living in a family household or whatever, a lot of people experience being kind of told not to pursue their creativity because you can't make money at it, for example, right? Oh, like, well, you can't do that. Like, you'll never make a living. You'll never make money. And a lot of people, like, you know, end up feeling like they were they kind of squat, they got squashed, you know, that their creative energy or their creative impulses or like that feeling of what you really inside feel like you want to do, it got kind of squashed by external forces because of any number of things, you know. You're not going to make money. You're not good at that, you know, or having one bad experience. So, yeah, it's deep, I think, when we both have worked with, you know, all different ages. And so I think we see it all the time that, you know, there's that you can adopt stories that are not your own.
Yes. Yes. True.
Limiting beliefs, sometimes we're given them, right? They're the limiting beliefs that like ended up being instilled in us because, you know, our parents, you know, and I'm so grateful. I talk about this all the time that like, I'm so grateful that somehow my parents, who were 34 at the time that I got into Annie, and to me, I'm like, that's mind blowing that they were like so young and they had this like kid that got into a Broadway show. But I think about how amazing it is that my parents were these, you know, supportive, you know, basically the minute they saw myself or my brother have any aptitude for anything, they were like, yes, yes, you know, let, they fed it, you know. But I know so many people who had the opposite experience. And what I know, because this is now what I do, and it's what I've studied as a master level transformational coach, and what our thoughts and beliefs, like where they come from, a lot of times those limiting beliefs came out of our parents having fear or trying to do what they thought was the best way to protect because of their own experience. And then it just gets passed on and passed on and passed on, you know?
Yeah, it's generational. It becomes a whole generational paradigm, for sure. So let's learn a little bit more even about you. So the next question being, how do you, Stacey, incorporate more creativity into your own life? I know this through.
Well,
so how do you incorporate it more for pleasure or for what inspires you?
Well, as I said earlier, you know, creating my own, like performing and creating my own, you know, show was something that felt very in alignment for me. And one of the reasons why I became an entrepreneur and a coach, like a solo person, was so that I could do that again. Now, I'm not going to lie, I have not been able to do that yet because building my business has been, you know, it's been taking a lot. And there was the pandemic, right? So it's funny, like I started my business and then there was the pandemic, and definitely not a good time to be figuring out, like, you know, how to work on music and stuff. But so one of the things that for me is the most, it makes me feel like a creative, because what it is I'm tapping into my own creative energy, which is that, I'm sorry, I got a weird message in my earphone and I don't know how to turn that off. I hope you didn't hear it. I don't know if you did.
I didn't.
Okay. Sorry. So, I go see a lot. Like, for example, this past Saturday night, I went to like a sort of underground immersive performance called Art Bath that was curated with all of these like incredible artists and performers. And I go to things like that. My husband and I, we spend a lot of our money on going to see theater, hear music, go to art, go to performances, because when I do those things, it like totally connects me to my creative energy. It fills me up. It reminds me of like my aliveness and my creative energy. So, and this has been for years, and this is why my podcast is called Passionate and Prosperous, because I would go to teach a yoga class and sit down in the beginning of class, and I'd always have something that I wanted to sort of talk about. And I would talk about how I had just seen this show or this art exhibit or, you know, gone to this experience. And it made me think about, you know, life and about being human and about whatever. And I'd start class with this like interesting conversation and perspective. And that's what I kind of became known for. But people would come up to me and they'd say, you know, how do you know how to like weave all of that stuff into your classes? And I'd say, well, it's because I'm constantly filling my cup by making sure that I'm out in the world, like experiencing the things that light me up and that bring me great joy. And for me, those are those creative experiences. So even if I'm not the one doing the performing,
yeah,
or doing the creating,
yeah,
being in creative environments, yeah, is my, one of my number one like priorities.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I've heard you say multiple times, and I totally resonate with this word experience. To have
the, yes,
experience, be part of the experience. It's, this is what lights us up. This is what gets us thinking. This is what allows us to feel. This is what creates connection. It's just, I love what you said about the art baths. Incredible. Incredible. Talk about like seeing and feeling so many different perspectives and just different ways of thinking in one place. It really does. It lights you up.
Oh, and you know, it's funny. I wrote an email to my email list about it on Saturday because, you know, it is true that I live in the heart of New York City. So I understand that I am lucky. I understand that I literally could buy a ticket to a Broadway show on the same day, right? Like my husband and I could be like, whoa, we have nothing tonight. Let's see if there's anything. And we could literally buy a ticket and if we wanted to walk to a theater, to the Broadway theater. Okay. And so we have access. I know that not everybody has that kind of access. It's one of the reasons why I live in New York, you know, why I'd rather have to work my butt off to make enough money to live here than not live here, right? For this reason. But what I also go to things that are not Broadway. We also, you know, go to off Broadway. And this art bath thing, the reason I wrote, you know, in my email that I sent out, I said, this was not famous people. This was not people that are making a bajillion dollars, you know, as artists. These are not people who, you know, are like, quote unquote, you know, living, you know, they haven't like made it. They're not famous, whatever. But they have to do their art. They have to do their work. And it was such an incredible thing to be in this space. And, you know, it was so well curated too. So there was like art on the walls that, you know, and the artists were there and there were installations and then there were also performances. And, you know, the performances, they weren't like totally wackadoo, but they were definitely not these like mainstream things that like you would see, you know, in a commercial theater. They were people really expressing themselves. There was one, you know, group of people where it was someone was using a singing bowls, right, and singing and playing a harmonium while four people were doing a dance performance, and they're like a troupe, and the dance was not like, you know, regular contemporary dance. It was this like very, very almost a yoga like dance. And I just, and then we saw these people playing piano where they had brought in two grand pianos, and at each piano, two people were sitting. So eight hands playing all of these incredible sonatas and whatever. And, you know, I left just filled with creative energy, even though it wasn't me being the artist, but just that inspiration and what you get from immersing yourself in those environments. And then for me, as a creative, my ideas start flowing, right? And so I literally woke up on Sunday, or, you know, Saturday rather. I went to this on Friday night, Saturday. I woke up the next day and a total divine download came to me. Nothing to do with the show, but I know that it's because I gave myself permission to just be in this creative environment, to take it in, to be present, to appreciate, to be grateful, because it's very easy in our lives to walk around thinking about all the things we haven't done, thinking about like our, like what, you know, what we still have to finish, our responsibilities, what's, you know, like all the things that are kind of hanging over our heads. I get stressed out in my business. I get overwhelmed, you know, who doesn't? When I give myself those times to go and be in a creative environment, I can tell you one thing, I'm not stressed out and I'm not overwhelmed because I'm giving myself a chance to just do this and to experience myself as an alive, like emotional human being having a human experience. And for me, that's how I get to do that. Otherwise, I would be totally stuck in the other human experience of, you know, what do I have to do? How am I going to get this done? You know, what's happening? What, like, who's doing this? Like, when am I getting another client? Am I making enough money? And I think that everybody has those thoughts, but we have to do things that help us to not have those thoughts for periods of time so that we could be experiencing the thing that's then going to allow us to figure out how to get more clients and make money.
Yeah, you definitely, it's kind of like what you said in the beginning where you said creativity is being in the moment. So here, mm-hmm. and what you're talking about is these times of being in the moment and getting out, switching up your routine, going into these places. I think off Broadway and these kind of spaces are even better than mm-hmm. You're in places of like no limitation, no boundaries, of like really, really like trying these different things. Not to say that doesn't happen necessarily on Broadway, but in these off Broadway kind of spaces, alternative kind of spaces, people really get to play and people really get to try things out. And there's so much that kind of flows. I couldn't agree more that when you see this and you're present in it, it releases you to be like, it opens you up to possibilities.
I agree. And going back to what you said earlier about like community and whatever, if you think about it, like when you go to things like that, the people are right there, that you're connecting with them. When I go to a Broadway show, I mean, unless I know someone in the show, it's not like I'm receiving this experience from someone who I am also connecting with as another human being. Like, I mean, I'm getting a little granular now, but when you're at, you know, at this art bath, for example, the performers are mingling among us after they do their thing, right? Then they're there and you're over there saying hi to them, right? And then we live in Chelsea, in New York City, which is known as like the art gallery sort of like area, you know? Like, I don't know, last year, right around the holidays, we were walking home from dinner and we saw like an art opening and walked in and loved this guy's work and got to talk to the artist. And then I went back and bought something for my husband for Christmas. And there's something so, it's like so extra when you know directly who's benefiting from your patronage. You know, it's very different than Broadway. And look, I'm a huge supporter of Broadway. I was on Broadway. I have lots of friends who are Broadway performers. We see all the shows, but there's something very different when you feel like you know who you're directly, you know, impacting.
Yeah. You know, you're having real conversations. You're having conversations directly with the artist, with the creator in that sense. And
exactly. And it feels special. And it feels like your heart gets, like, to me at least, I guess I'm only speaking about myself, it makes my heart feel like full. It makes me feel connected. And like we said in the very beginning, my definition of creativity has a lot to do with being human. Yeah. And human connection and, you know, getting to talk to, you know, artists and the people whose work you're buying or paying to see. To me, that like adds this whole other level that just really like lights me up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to stress too to people is that being in New York or being in a city, yes, you have access to these things more easily, but you don't have to live in a city to have access to these kind of things. You just have to maybe look for it a little bit more, but look at local colleges, look and see what's going on in town around you at local galleries or theaters or anything like that. So you don't
there have are local theaters everywhere.
You don't have to be in a city to necessarily experience what Stacey and I are talking about. So
I agree. And you know, it's funny. I actually have a lot of friends, you know, like that I've met as an entrepreneur that I connect with from all over the place. And a couple of months ago, I was on a Zoom with a coach, a guy who's a coach who we sort of were following each other on Facebook. And he was like, I kind of feel like we should like know each other. And I was like, I do too. And so we had a Zoom and, you know, he's an actor. He's never lived in like New York or LA or, you know, he's in like Nebraska or something, or, you know, he's somewhere. And he's like got a whole local, you know, improv scene there, and he does Shakespeare there. And I actually said to him, there's a little part of me that's like a little bit envious, because in New York, it's actually not that easy to do like something that you would call like kind of your local community theater. It's, you know, New York is New York, no matter what, right? But like, I sometimes think, oh my God, like if I did live in some like totally other place and there was like a community theater, I would love to like do a show. You know, it's just in New York, it's not easy to just, you know, hey, let's just do a show. Like it's not the same, but I do get envious. I know people that get to do theater and do things because they don't live in a big city, and there is more, it's kind of a little bit easier to be like, hey, why, I just feel like performing, even though it's not like what I'm trying to make a living at. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Quick story, before we lived in the city for a bit, and we were in Queens and Manhattan. And anyway, at one point, my husband was doing, he was part of an acting troupe, and they were like off Broadway kind of thing in a small black box theater on the west side, around Times Square, but on the west side. But anyway, I was about 9 months pregnant, and Arthur would be performing, you know, in a decent amount of shows. And he looked at me and he's like, can I just do one more? I was about to pop. And he's like, can I just do one more show? And we don't have this relationship where it's like having to ask for permission.
Right.
I was just getting to a point where I was just like, I don't know when this is going to happen. And what if you're gone and I go into labor? And he's like, just one more show. I was like, fine.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Go do it. I remember the walk all the way to where it was. But yeah, it just, they had the ability to really be able to just dive in and truly be expressive. So I was happy. It's great. It's just great in anything that you do when you have that outlet. We're getting to the top of the hour, which this has gone really fast.
Yeah.
So, but before I get to the last question to wrap everything up, I just would love to know, do you have any kind of a morning routine?
I do. I don't even have, I don't even schedule anything unless I have to before 11. I know that's very sort of, you know, luxurious, but yeah, when I wake up in the morning, I actually consider that to be the most sort of creative and sacred time. of the day before like everything kicks in, right? Like I call it like your outgoing brain, the brain that's now focusing on, you know, what you have to do. And then also the brain before it starts taking in too much outside stimulation, right? Like the, so in the morning I wake up, I stay in bed for a very long time, a little embarrassing, but like I sit in my bed, I drink a lot of water and I kind of like do my quiet time. I don't have to feel like it's meditation. Sometimes it's just sitting with my eyes closed and just noticing what my thoughts are, because then I know if I need to do any thought change work, right? So sometimes I have to put in some affirmations, like if I have some thoughts that are maybe not the ones I want to be having, I'll like affirm something that I do want to be thinking or believing. So I do affirmations. I do my sort of quiet time. I will often do some brain dump storming. I call it brainstorm and brain dumping. So I don't journal like where I write dear diary, but I will put pen to paper and just write ideas or anything that is coming to me. And I spend a lot of time, I pet my cats and I move, you know, that's when I do some sort of movement, even if it's not a big workout, it might just be even a breathing and stretching to just make sure that I'm, you know, my heart's open and I'm alive. And so that can range, you know, anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours. And just really just taking the time to be more, with myself than with other people. That's kind of like the best way to put it.
And again, it goes back to the beginning where you said it's being in the present moment. So
yeah,
it really is taking the time and acknowledging of being, of doing these things and doing what feels good. And I love that. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
Always good. I love hearing all this and it gives me ideas too.
And I think that people, and this is something I talk about a lot, and I know we're wrapping up, but I think that like that mornings are such critical times for like how your rest of your day goes. And one of the first things I ever did when I was a health coach was a workshop called How to Have a Great Day. And I actually, you know, wrote a chapter in like one of those compilation books like of health coaches called How to Have a Great Day. Because this is something that I feel so strongly about, is that like what you get to do in the morning is kind of that, you know, when we use the word mindset, it gets used so much now. Mindset. I think like, well, what is that really? How do you want to set your mind? How do you want to set yourself up for success for the rest of the day? And we have to do that every day. It's not like we can do it once and then be like, I'm good. We have to do it every day.
Right. Exactly. It's an ongoing process. So as we are at the top of the hour and putting kind of like a little bow on everything, the last question is, why do you think creativity is important?
I think creativity is the thing that puts you in touch with your aliveness. I think it's the thing that lets you know that you're alive, that you're in motion, that you are, that you're not, as we said earlier, stuck, stagnant, you know, plateaued, all the things that no one wants to feel, that nobody wants to feel like this is it. Mm-hmm. And I think creativity is so important because it's the thing that keeps you in touch with that spark of your aliveness. It's the thing that like keeps you out of thinking that your whole purpose here is just to be in your head and to function, you know, to get by. I think creativity is the thing that reminds you that you're not just here to get by.
Oh my gosh, there we go. So much wisdom said in all of that. Stacey, how can people connect with you?
Well, I'm on all the socials, of course, as my name, Stacey Brass Russell. And I have a website, www.stacybrassrussell.com. And there's actually a lot of resources there, free resources, depending on what some of it is, would be perfect for our audience, how to connect with your authentic voice. You know, there's stuff there, embodying practices, more than just, you know, business stuff, in case someone doesn't only want business stuff. So my website's a great place, and my podcast, Passionate and Prosperous, which is on all the platforms. And it's a real great mix of business stuff for entrepreneurs, but also a lot of what we talked about today, Hollis, just a lot of this, there's just all of this deeper stuff about like what it means to be human and trying to use your gifts and to make your way in the world. Like, you know, despite the fact that life can be really hard and that there's just always a way that we can figure out what to do about it.
Yes. Love all of it. So, oh my gosh, before we say our former goodbyes, is there anything else that you feel like you want to say or get off your chest?
I feel like this was such a good conversation. I think I said so many of the things that I think are really important. So I guess the final thing that I'll say, to our listeners is, and this is one of the things that I, you know, kind of like have as one of my paradigms, and I have an episode on this too. You can always make more money, but you can't make more time. So if there's anything that, you know, that you keep telling yourself is the reason why you can't do the things that you want to do, I'm here to tell you, it's never going to feel like the perfect time. And that's the one thing that you can't make more of is time. So please don't delay. Please don't waste your time thinking that there's going to be a perfect time, because there never will be. So you might as well do what you want to do now.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, Stacey, thank you so much for hanging out and chatting and having this expansive conversation. I really appreciate you.
Thank you for inviting me and for having me. This was really great. I've never done a live podcast.
There we go. A bunch of firsts.
Yep.
Good, good, good. Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody. Those that were here with us live, those catching the replay. I know you could be doing anything with your hour, and we so appreciate you spending it with us. I believe this conversation about creativity has always been an important conversation, but I think now we need it more than ever. So please like, follow, share, all of that good stuff, so we can just reach more people and hear the conversations, so people can feel more joy in their life. So wherever you are in the world, I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, a good evening, and look forward to talking to you again soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
I believe these conversations have always been important, but now I think that they are more important than ever. Please like, follow, share, spread the goodness, because people really need to hear these messages in order to be able to see themselves in them, in order to be able to hear these people's stories, in order to be able to expand their thinking. It is so important to really understand that creativity is life. And everybody has creativity within them. To find out more about what we offer, go to iamcreativephilly.com, and you will see that there are services from publishing, multi-author and solo books, kits, workshops, and retreats to creativity one-on-one coaching. So if you are ready to unleash your voice, break through your blocks, and confidently share your story, I cannot wait to help you birth your ideas into the world.